Welcome back to the Dear Katie podcast. This is Katie Kessner.
This is Claire Kaplan. As always, I want to remind our listeners that sometimes the discussions can be a little difficult to hear and to process, especially for survivors of trauma. So we encourage you to care for your safety and well-being. Reach out for emotional support from family or friends, counselor if you have one, or our hotline. We'll provide some additional resources at the end of the podcast from the Take Back the Night Foundation.
Thanks. And I know Claire's struggling a little bit with her internet connection today. So for our guests, I'll just reiterate what Claire just went over is we're going to have tons of resources for you on the Dear Katie podcast portion of our site, the Take Back the Night site. And please definitely take a break at any point if you have trouble with any of the material we're going to cover. But as we always love to hear from our guests, how they come to their microphone, we are so excited to have Sandy with us today to share their story. And Sandy, share a little bit about who you are and how you come to your mic.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you for having me on. My name is Sandy, and I'm a professional librarian with a master's degree from the University of Pittsburgh, a second master's degree in human resources management from Stony Brook University in New York. I was born in Kansas and grew up in Pennsylvania. I have a younger sister. She's on the autistic spectrum, so communication is difficult with her. I'm also transgender. In terms of sexual orientation, I am bisexual or pansexual, but not everybody knows what pansexual means. I've always been a bit of a tomboy, and I'm also a domestic violence survivor.
Oh my gosh, that was so amazing that you shared all of that in one like fell swoop, Sandy. That was a lot to hear, and I think there's a lot to unpack. And growing up in Kansas and all the journey you had, I'm sure, not that Kansas is a place without thoughtfulness around transgender folks. There are different laws and policies all over this country called the United States applicable to what you just said, even. So let's start somewhere. Where would you like to start with your own personal experience?
That's a good question. I'm just going to jump right into the abuse that I experienced. And I was brutally attacked by my ex. I started throwing remote controls against the wall, and I told her to stop. By the third or fourth remote control I grabbed her arm, I'm just going to call her Karen. I told her to stop throwing remotes, and she violently attacked me.
Oh, my goodness.
So with her hand, she dug her fingernails as hard as she could into my skin, and I was bleeding. I tried to get away from her. And before I knew it, she had grabbed me by my utilikilt with the full force of her arms and her body, pulling me towards her. And then while holding me by my kilt, by my skirt, she proceeded to punch me in the face. And it hurt so much, I ended up in the emergency room. And I got to tell you, utility kilt, it's the ultimate skirt for a tomboy. Yet getting beat up like this, it hurts no matter who you are. If you are a cisgender man and you got beat up by a woman, you can probably relate to what I went through. Getting beat up by a girl is profoundly humiliating. Getting beat up by anybody is humiliating. But months after my assault, I was having difficulty breathing. So I had to get my nose rebuilt by an ENT, an ear, nose, and throat doctor, so I could breathe again. It's called rhinoplasty, and it's a painful surgery, yet it worked wonders, and today I can breathe. It's really a difficult ordeal to go through, and there's just so many things that happened with this. One is that my ex showed absolutely no remorse. I mean, you know, and maybe that might have been a blessing in disguise. So she didn't go in and say, oh, I'm so sorry, and here's some flowers, or, you know, it was more like I got verbally berated by her mother after the assault, telling me that I was going to lose my best friend unless I fixed this. And meanwhile, I just gotten out of the emergency room. I was in an awful, awful lot of pain. And there wasn't any support from her family at all. It was just scorn and ridicule. And it was really a terrible thing to go through.
Yeah, it sounds very traumatic, Sandy. Maybe tell us a little bit about what happened after the whole emergency room, like, and how long ago was this in your life?
It was last year. So it was August of 2022.
Okay. So this happened. And how long had you been with her?
We'd been together 17 years.
That is a long time.
Yes.
Were there other things prior to this that were going on, or?
There were some warning signs along the way. There was one time she was at a doctor's office, and apparently they had misplaced some paperwork or something for her. And it was one of these things where rather than talk it out with the person at the doctor's office, she went outside and she took her smartphone and she chucked it into the pavement as hard as she could. And I told Karen, I said, that's not a healthy response, what you're doing. I mean, you need to talk with these folks and work it out and figure out what happened with the paperwork or what you need to do if you need to resubmit it or whatever it is. But throwing your smartphone into the ground, in the pavement, that's not going to help anything. And she responded with explosive anger. And she was jumping up and down and screaming at me at the top of her lungs.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
So it sounds like she, does she, oh, you go ahead, Claire.
Yeah, I do have a question, Cindy. That is that, so you were together 17 years. Did you see an escalation of her behaviors?
I saw an escalation. I would have to say when her cancer came back. She had cancer at an earlier point in her life and it had come back. And when it came back, she became kind of a different, not kind of, she became a different person. She was a lot more mean, a lot more angry. And, you know, when you've been with somebody for over a decade and you've had 18 really pretty, awesome, good years, it's a real jolt when things start to go downhill and go south that quickly. And yeah, so I want to say it was the first 12 years or so were phenomenal. And then a few years were kind of rough. They were so-so, but then it really got bad when her cancer came back. And in particular, with the start of the pandemic, not that that excuses anything that she did. It doesn't. I mean, there are lots of people who get cancer and they manage not to beat people up. And what kind of response I had from law enforcement, health, medical professionals, doctors, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Okay.
The Ambridge Police Department was the epitome of professionalism. I called 911 and in under 2 minutes, I had a police officer at my door knocking on the door. Under 2 minutes, which is very quick turnaround time. I mean, I explained to them what was going on, the police officer, and they told me that I should get a protection from abuse order, that I needed to get that. And they asked about what had happened. And I explained that she had beat me up and she was punching me in the face and all these things that had happened. And I was bleeding, blood everywhere. It was a real mess. And they went over and they talked to Karen and they said, well, what? And she said she admitted that she punched me in the face to the police. And then the police arrested her and they charged her with atrocious assault. And they did what they were supposed to do. It wasn't a pleasant situation for anybody involved. I had, I want to say, about half a dozen police officers in my house. They were really frightened of Karen, too, and what had happened. They called for backup. So there were police from other police departments in the outlying area that had come in just because they didn't felt like they needed extra police. They were really good. When I went in for my, when I went to the emergency room, the medical staff there, they told me I was doing the right thing. They told me it takes a lot of courage, but they were going to document what had happened, that this was domestic violence. They took it quite seriously. If there was one place that really kind of dropped the ball, I felt that the district attorney's office, because they offered my ex a plea agreement where basically in exchange for some mental health counseling sessions, they dropped the charges. And it really frustrated me because I felt that I have had to undergo surgery because of my injuries. I have scar tissue that's lingered on my face. It almost feels like little tumors on my lips and my face from where she hit me. And there's a scar tissue that's lingered. So, you know, I'm the one who's left with the lasting ramifications of her behavior. And to just say, oh, well, you can go to a few mental health counseling sessions and that's that. I think that's ludicrous. I think that she, and apparently I'm not the only one who's felt that way. I mean, there've been other people I've met in Beaver County who felt that they didn't get the best as victims of violent crimes, that they weren't being treated well by the district attorney's office. So it's unfortunate. I don't think anybody's happy to be in a situation like what I found myself in yet. On the other hand, I am a survivor and I found some ways to heal in ways and things that I hadn't really thought of. And it kind of brought out a different side of me that I wasn't really in tune with. I never thought I'd be a victim of a violent crime, let alone somebody that I loved so much. and was in a relationship for 17 years. It was a long, it was really an incredibly devastating thing to go through.
Andy, I'm going to interrupt because you're talking a lot and I, you know, no, you're doing great. And I can tell this is hard and you're so brave and you're sharing a story that really needs to be told. And we are so grateful. I just wanted to give you a power boost and you're amazing. And I have a question. And if you can think about two things that you would like our listeners to know that make, I think some people would say, oh, I've been through like 100 million things worse than what Sandy's been through. And if there's never any sort of competition in the world of sexual violence, but there is the importance of helping other people understand that each of our journeys for healing is really unique and might be more challenging in certain ways than others. So what are the two most, I think, challenging things for you? I want to do two challenges and two heartthrobs. Like, I remember when, you know, you and I were talking about like the new Take Back the Night shirt line and you're like, oh, I love this. And just a wearable sometimes is, you know, and our audience can't see you, but you are just in this most gorgeous dress that you made with these beautiful bows and people will never, I mean, I feel like you should take an Instagram of you and like put it out there because they won't see how lovely you looked. But I just really feel like people need to get to know who Sandy is and two challenges and two like really hope as we round out toward the end of our discussion, like two things that are hard for you that you want people to know about and think about and how the listeners who are in the field of helping others can do better. And then I'll ask the other question again. So what are two things that are challenging?
To me, the biggest challenge was the, I would have to say the lack of any kind of remorse on the part of my ex. And it may have been a blessing in disguise, but it was still a real challenge for me because I felt so profoundly hurt by it.
Right.
And then for her to just be like, oh, well, I didn't do anything wrong. And the reality is she agreed to a plea agreement. So it wasn't like she was found not guilty.
Right.
You know.
You didn't exactly pay off the prosecution.
Yeah, I know. And that's been a really hard thing for me because I felt that that's been a challenge going through the Pennsylvania Victims Compensation Fund. And there's just a lot of red tape and it takes a while to get compensated for the checks. I mean, eventually they do arrive and it takes a while that dealing with the red tape with that. I think that just in general, there needs to be a little bit more to help people who are victims of violent crimes. And I went through that and that was a real challenge for me. Those two things, definitely.
Yeah, for sure. I hear you on that. And I guess another question is, remember you started out like, I don't even know if people know what pansexual means. I was thinking maybe I hate to do dictionary.com, but maybe that would be a helpful place for people to understand what your journey is like around your sexuality and your identity. I think that would be beautiful if you're comfortable.
Sure. Why not? I'm transgender and I basically, pansexual is a fancy way of saying that I'm attracted to people of all gender identities, which sounds like being bisexual, but bisexual means that there's like a gender binary and I'm attracted to people who may be non-binary, attracted to the person. And that's just kind of the way it is for me. And being trans, I mean, there's a lot of things and challenges that we face. I would say there are challenges in the workplace. There are challenges. I've been dealing with the state of Kansas with trying to get my gender changed on my birth certificate. And that's been an awful, actually just, I'll just say it's awful. It's an awful situation. It shouldn't be. It shouldn't be a problem at all. But there are people who pass these laws and in Kansas and encountering resistance to things. It shouldn't even be really a problem. So I think that what I've learned from it all is I've ended up making some really, really cool friends that way. And I can tell you one thing that's really helped me out was making some transgender friends. And there's a column I read. There's a writer by the name of Dan Savage. He writes a column called Savage Love. And he had this advice and it just so happened. The advice came out right after I got assaulted by Karen. And I'm reading this column and he's talking about what to do. And I should mention Dan Savage is gay himself. So he's a gay advice columnist. It's, I think, a lot of insights that are helpful for people who are LGBTQ and really actually for a lot of heterosexual people too. I think he's a good person to read. and just be aware of. And what he said was, so somebody had written him in who was a domestic violence survivor, and she was asking him for advice, and she gave her advice about what to do and maybe ways to reframe things and how you could go about meeting people. So of course, his advice is just probably a little bit off the charts for some folks, but basically he was saying, well, you could go to events, meet people on social media. I want to say like FetLife, sites like that, that they're 18 and over, but they're not for, you have to be at least an adult, 18 or 21 or older. And I thought maybe I should take a look. And lo and behold, I'm going on a site, and I knew you have to be a little careful because you just never know who you're going to meet. Actually, anywhere online, you have to be careful. But I saw an event over at an LGBT center, and I thought, well, if I go there, probably going to be pretty safe, I think. It seems like it's safer than college, some college campuses these days. But I went there, and I met a whole bunch of people who are transgender, like myself. And it was really wonderful. Yeah. So I ended up making all these wonderful friends, and we hang out. And sometimes we hang out at the LGBT center. Sometimes we go over for dinner parties. Sometimes we go out to the movies. It's just wonderful. And they're wonderful people, and they come from all walks of life. So I have friends who work in factories, warehouses. I have one friend who's a retired special agent from the DEA. Just kind of run the gamut. That's something that's really helped me heal, making those friends. That's been phenomenal. And it's just really great because they look out for me. I look out for them, help each other. We have good advice for each other, that kind of thing. And these are the kinds of friends where I feel like I've made friends for life kind of thing.
That's just so really helpful. I think it's so great not to be alone. Claire, we've been chatting about what's helpful and what's hurtful in Sandy's world. And I don't know if we were just going over identity and helping our listeners understand Sandy's personal journey. Yeah. What else would you like to share? Where to from here, Sandy, for you? In terms of your activism now and taking a stand, what's your goal? I hear about the groups you're forming at colleges. What about in your personal life and your partnerships going forward?
Well, and to be clear, I'm not forming groups on college campus. It's we're
yeah, joining. I should say joining and networking.
Yeah. Joining and networking. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, the things that I really like doing, I go to ice cream therapy in Ambridge, and it is ice cream in all its glory. And they've got a really wonderful couple, a married couple there, and they're wonderful people. And the ice cream, that has helped me heal a lot. It's just knowing that I can go out and get ice cream or get a nice slush. And I do that. Going out and getting facials, that's a big thing. There's a Una Bella, there's a really good spa in Ambridge that I go to. And just getting my face all done up, it just feels great. It really helps me an awful lot. Yeah.
Self-treat.
Well, it's self-care. When you think about self-care, we think about large, huge things like go to therapy, which is obviously part of that. But it's also taking a hot bath and, you know, with bubbles or getting a facial. It's all those things. Getting ice cream. I'm all for that.
Yeah. That's basically how I see it. I mean, I mean, being a survivor of domestic violence really changed me and how I see the world. I used to be more, I don't even know, trying to think about how to put this into words, how it's changed me, but I'm not the same person that I was before. And I find that activism or what I'm doing, like sometimes be just going on a podcast or telling people about my story. And then people start to tell me about their stories. And that's been really, really powerful. So I've ended up making friends with some women who are domestic violence survivors. And we bonded in a way that pretty strong bond. I feel really grateful to have that too in my life.
Everything you say, Sandy, is so hopeful and helpful. It's like such a fabulous interview. And for our guests, Sandy and I chatted, and Sandy's like, I'm nervous, but I'm like, you feel this. And like, your voice is just so powerful and so clear. And I feel like you have a good, strong vision about what you need. And you're actively seeking out relationships to support you, Sandy. That's such a fabulous skill set. What I hear is like, you're not shrinking, you're not hiding, you're going and seeking support. And that's what the podcast is all about, and uniting all of our survivors together. So thank you for being a role model in that fearlessness.
And I also feel a sense of calm and peace in my life. I could still get plenty angry about what Karen did. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's a terrible thing. And the district attorney's office, my words, not helpful. And I look at Karen and she's just a pathetic loser. Quick story. My next door neighbor, just a good guy all around, and a fire broke out catty corner to my house, and a police officer arrived. Actually, the same police officer who arrested Karen was first on the scene, and he's looking, and apparently there are five people trapped in this house that's burning down on my block. And the police officer looks around, he sees my next door neighbor and says, the people in the house. And he said, my neighbor said, I've got a ladder. Here you go. And then he just put a ladder out. And he saved people's lives, you know, and they got out of the building, a burning building. And it's things like that that really touch me when you realize that there are some good people in this world and they're trying to make the world better, dignify the world with their existence, as opposed to Karen, who diminishes herself repeatedly by using violence to try to justify her means. That's the thing that I take away from it.
I love that, Sandy. I love that you are talking about Karen still in such a hopeful way that she'll come to a better place. It sounds like what you're saying, the exact perfect thing. Perpetrators can't say, I did this because there's no excuse for violence ever, right? And I think you're saying that.
Yeah.
So I love it. Claire, as we conclude with Sandy, is there anything else you can think of that we should chat about?
Well, first, Sandy, I'm sorry I had all these technical issues and disappeared for a while. So I don't know what I'll discuss, but I just want to say that I think we need more survivors who are trans and gender nonconforming and LGBTQ. I think we need more folks speaking out as best they can, because nothing will change until that happens, right? I mean, we have to push against the wall that exists because nothing will change.
I wanted to mention, too, that I go to an LGBTQ-affirming synagogue, and that's been a big source of strength in my life, too. They've been wonderful people, and getting that affirmation that makes, you know, even though being trans is not easy all the time, it's really made my life much better for it.
Hooray. Well, Sandy, thank you so much for joining us. We delight in your thrivership. And we hope that you will continue to grow and heal and perhaps share any piece of your journey with our listeners. When we release and drop, you can voice in as you feel comfortable and follow the feedback from everyone else who gets to hear your story and your journey. So thank you so much. And Claire, can you close us out?
I sure can. So thank you again, Sandy, for sharing your story with us today on Dear Katie. And thank you also to our wonderful volunteers who make every aspect of the podcast happen. And thank you to our listeners. Help us help other survivors by subscribing to our podcast. Share it far and wide on your social media, and please follow us on ours. If you need support and but don't know where to find it, if you visit takebackthenight.org for a list of resources, you also can find that as well as how to access our legal support hotline. And remember also, self-care is essential to healing and to thriving.
Thank you so much, Claire. And thank you again, Sandy. Keep going.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, everyone, take care. And please continue to tune in to the Dear Katie podcast. If you are like Sandy and love swag, we have tons of cool artists giving out their beautiful designs to us to put on some cool shirts and other bags and mugs, etc. And if that makes you feel one moment of happiness and peace and joy, we encourage you to follow Sandy's lead and do a wearable every day. So thank you, Sandy, and thank you to our listeners, and please continue to tune in and follow.